stable. Even that comes with some issues. You know, you may need new mask filters and other components, but you like to get an inventory of everything that's at the site. And it's not just the transmitters in place, it's the RF components. There could be things hanging from the ceiling, on the floor, on the walls. There's electrical considerations. There are considerations for heating and ventilation, because a new transmitter probably is more efficient than the old one in terms of electrical energy consumed, but it also means it puts out less heat. So your building may get colder in the winter. There's little things like that that could happen after you've done the changeover. I know you can't read the slides, so this is just, I'm going to go quickly through the next few slides. Basically, it's through the site survey. This one was for KIAH, which I believe is a Tribune station in Houston. So we went there back in June, did a site survey. There's, you know, an index at the front. We take some pictures of the building around the outside. We might get an aerial view. Maybe that one's from Google Maps or somewhere. An aerial view of the site, because we want to see the site access. You know, when someone's delivering equipment, it can be big trucks and things. You want to make sure you can get to a site. I know it's usually not a problem in somewhere like Houston, but if you're on a mountaintop somewhere out in, you know, in the Rockies, it's going to be a little bit different story. Pushing buttons, here we go. So we have a good look at what's in the building to start with. There's some existing equipment. There happens to be a two-tube IoT transmitter in this building. In general, you want to be able to put a new transmitter on without disturbing the old one, at least disturbing it as little as possible. So we try to plan around what's already there. In a few cases, we've had to advise customers to go to half power, maybe, to make space for new equipment. Some transmitter buildings are incredibly small and tight. This particular one happened to be pretty big, so we were lucky. So we go around the site looking again at everything that's in there. There's a lot of things that you need to take into consideration, but mainly it's looking at the existing layout, how much space is used. You can see we've taken a lot of photos, and actually this is just a summary of probably 100 or more photos that we're taking of the site. There might even be a video where we walk around and look at every aspect. You've got to look carefully at what's around the building in terms of space available for things like cooling systems. This is a liquid-cooled transmitter that they're purchasing, so we have to make sure there's room outside, as well as inside for plumbing, pump modules, heat exchangers, and so forth. And you can see lots of things that need to be addressed here. Again, looking at, you know, existing equipment, there's a pump module over here, some other components on the far left. Outside, you can see there's some existing heat exchangers. Will those have to be moved? Are they in the right spot? Where did the new ones go? In this case, there's an ice bridge over the top. You want to keep under that if possible. There's even down south, you can get ice. And ice coming off towers, you probably all have experienced, can damage equipment incredibly. So you definitely want to take care of things like that. I'm trying to move forward here a little bit. So you can see here a bunch more pictures taken, both inside and out. And things that are hanging from the ceiling can be a problem. You know, you've got up there, you've got a big grid of structure with RF line, plumbing, electrical, all of those things can be in the way, which basically leads to, you know, and do quite a bit of work. Okay, so we keep going. There's electrical aspects we looked at here. On the electrical side, you have to be careful. You know, the new transmitter probably is much more efficient than the old one, so the power consumption is lower, so the existing electrical service in general is adequate. There have been a few cases where people are increasing the size of their new transmitter, however, because they're forced into a lower gain antenna. And of course, there's a calculation there with antenna gain, line loss, and transmitter power to reach the authorized effective radiated power. So sometimes the transmitter power has been increased. In a few cases, they've purposely added some power to the transmitter because thinking forward to ATSC3, a lot of customers are planning for mobile reception, indoor reception, and so forth, and circular polarization or some form of elliptical polarization is actually a pretty good idea. There's been some technical articles and papers written on that topic. Won't get into it now, but a typical customer that wants to increase power is looking at probably somewhere in the range of 25 to 30 to 35% V-pole added on top of the H-pole power. So it's 30 to 35% increase in power requirements to reach that goal. So they want to leave space for maybe an added cabinet in the future, you know, an added rack of amplifiers to increase the power later, or they're just going to spend some of their own funds on top of what the government's funding here for the repack to get a bigger transmitter up front. So there are some people needing more power. The other thing you have to consider with power, electrical power, is you probably really, really want to be able to run both transmitters at the same time, at least in some testing phase, because you want to be able to prove it works into a dummy load, and maybe at night you're going to check it into the antenna once that's up and connected properly before the actual transition date. So you need to look at electrical considerations pretty carefully. So there's quite a bit of information now. We had to look carefully at what the existing service is, size of breakers, fuses, you know, the panels. Do we have to have an electrical contractor come in and redo that? In most cases, yes. There's been some changes needed to make everything work properly. So at the end of all that, it's probably a 25, 30-page document. There's a summary. And basically, in summary, it gives the customer some idea what he needs to do to prep the site before we even start the installation, if we're doing the work, or if he or his contractor is doing the work. If he needs an HVAC guy to come in, which typically they do just to rearrange things, even though the heat load into the room of a liquid-cooled transmitter is not so high, there may be some changes needed there, and of course, electrical I just talked about. Plus, we also do some layout drawings because we want to be able to see how it all fits. The customer wants to make sure it will fit because you don't want to run into a space limitation. So a plan view of a existing layout is probably important. You can see this room's pretty big because the transmitter's kind of up in that busy area in the top left-hand side. There's quite a bit of other facility space available here. That's kind of before the installation. Then there's kind of a phase one here of putting in the new transmitter, which is, you can just see it along the bottom there. Do we have a clicker that works? I don't know if we have one. Anyway, I was going to point at it. But basically, you can see where the new transmitter cabinets are. In the center of that slide is, looks like four, yes, it's a four-rack transmitter. So they're going with a fairly large solid-state transmitter.
There's a light.
Oh, there is? Is this it? Oh, got it. Thank you. This is it. All I have to do is, it's so technically clever, I can't figure out, but there we go. So there's the new transmitter. There's four racks here. The existing one is over here somewhere. So this is kind of like in front of it. And there's a huge amount of RF system components up here, all right? So, you know, it's quite a lot of problems there because you're adding a second RF system on top of a new RF system, and eventually all those old parts have to come out as well. So there's another phase here where the old transmitter has now been removed. This particular site also had a backup transmitter, which is sitting right here. It's a single rack, solid state, but I want to keep that as their backup. It's lower power, but it's a backup. They stay on the air. So you notice this one did remain. The old transmitter was removed. The new system's in with its mask filters here, some combining, and an output to waveguide switch and on out of the building. So a final step might be to move that backup transmitter to be in line with the new transmitter so everything looks nice and neat and tidy. So it's kind of like a four-step installation thing there. And once that's been drawn up by us and reviewed by the customer and everybody's kind of agreed that that's a reasonably good plan, then it's pretty easy to do a bill of material, create a quotation, figure out all the parts that are needed. And the transmitter part's pretty easy for us. I guess hard is figuring out all the bits and pieces to connect to maybe an existing waveguide switch and what adapters are needed and, you know, what's necessary to make the whole thing work without any missing parts, because missing parts like a waveguide to correct adapter you might think is pretty easy to get quickly. Not today. You know, those guys that make that stuff are really, really busy. You know, ERI, Dielectric, Jampro, and Catrine, and all the people that sell these components here, Myatt is another one, they all are busy. So just add an order and we need it tomorrow, not always easy to do. So you gotta be very careful with that. All right, the next set of slides comes back from a bit earlier this year, and I did actually show most of these slides at a little sales presentation customer meeting we had at NAB this year, so apologize if there's any repeat for some of you that were at that event. But we had a pretty good set of pictures here, a pictorial view of an installation from moving equipment in to completing the job. So I want to run through that pretty quickly with you. So phase one here is really start on a delivery day, you offload a truck, we rent maybe this type of equipment, because this stuff is really heavy. The transmitter rack is made of steel. You know, it weighs, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pounds, so you can't just pick it up. You need to get that into the building, and hopefully there's room. There was in this case, of course, so there's a bit more work. You notice that this transmitter cabinet is shipped on its back because they're very tall, and these racks, the newest transmitters we build, the liquid core ones, are about 7 feet tall, so by the time you get that on a skid, or you know, and then you jack it up a bit higher on a pallet jack or something to get it through a doorway, can be problematic. So you notice this thing's on its back, and they're actually using two pallet jacks to move that around because it's quite long. So some equipment needed there to rent as well. And then we find somewhere to put it inside the building, and we also, you know, take a good look at the ceiling to see where everything's going to go, and look at the existing equipment, and start unboxing everything and moving it into place. Here we are lifting a rack. You know, you notice it's from its back. It has to be made upright. This takes a bit of work and some hoisting equipment. Again, if there's nothing available on site, that has to be rented as well. And that's one of four racks that we're going together in this particular installation. So here's a top view of those racks that are in place, taken from the ceiling. Here's a back view. Here's some of the equipment we're also using to get up and down so you can actually get to the ceiling on top of the transmitter. In this case, you can see some hoses. It's a liquid cooled system. Hoses are used commonly, but we do have options for solid copper pipe for those who prefer that. We've been using hoses for quite a few years and haven't run into any significant problems with that. Here's some mask filters. What we're doing on all of these newer liquid cooled transmitters is nearly always we're doing a separate mask filter per rack because they're smaller, they're easier to make tunable. Should you ever need to change channel for the next repack, if should there ever be one, these are tunable. Hopefully there won't be another repack. So there's a separate one. When you look at the plumbing system, you'll also notice that there's a cooling system per rack. And that may seem overcomplicated. I've got a pump module per rack. I've got a heat exchanger per rack. But it does give you a level of redundancy. Should you ever want to drain the coolant, replace it in the future, if you had a small leak, you wanted to patch it somehow or change a hose, you don't have to shut the whole transmitter down. So here's some more pictures. I'm going to run through these fairly quickly. You can see the mask filters here mounted in kind of a frame that we built on site. Some more views. I think you'll see a combiner over here, some higher views looking down at the equipment from higher up. See some plumbing here. There's quite a bit going on at this site because it's a big transmitter. This transmitter is capable of about 75 kilowatts of average power. I think they're licensed for 67 point something. See, we've still got the old-fashioned work going on with silver soldering flanges onto copper transmission line components that were cut on site to fit. Sometimes you can order parts exactly to the length you want, but usually we want to cut it and fit it on site because things move around a bit and nothing's ever perfect. So the installation continues. You can see the dates flying on. We've been there almost a couple of weeks already, on and off. You know, probably not working weekends. Still continuing, but it looking like it's getting a lot more complete here. Here's some more pictures, continuing again. You can see looking very busy, but everything's neatly in place. Finally, it's done. You can see some powered up here on the exciters and so forth, control system. It's ready for commissioning. The installation crew leave the site at this point. Once the customers, you know, agreed that everything is done that was agreed upon. I don't know if these videos are play or if I have enough time to try it, but I don't know if I can. I can't click on anything here, so I probably won't play the videos. So, click on the one on the right, please. Okay. Yeah, there you go, on that yellow button. So there would be audio, but it's probably not connected, so I'll just talk through it a little bit. So the guy's done the installation. He's just going to walk around the facility to show that everything's in place. Now, from this, I put this video in because you can get a better idea where everything is. And what was needed to complete the RF side of this installation. I'm not sure if there's a good view of the electrical installation because we would hire a contractor to do that anyway, but all electrical was neatly laid out in conduit. There's some on the wall there. Some big bird dummy loads. We use those as reject loads. You might think you could use liquid cooled loads, but it's actually easier and you can use smaller pump modules and things if you just do air cooled loads wherever possible. Quite a bit of cable tray work going on up high. Luckily, this building had a very high ceiling, so there was, you know, lots of space vertically to use. We've seen buildings that have very low ceilings. It's a lot more difficult to make everything fit. But you can see this had tons of space available, which made it very easy for us to do. He's pointing out something up there. I'm not sure what, but
I'll show you fans on the way outside. Bye.
Oh, That was it. There was a little bit of audio at the end. Okay, I'll go to the next slide. Thank you. So we measured it. The performance of these new transmitters is actually better than advertised. We found out with the new versions of what we call real-time adaptive correction, things fall into place very quickly once the system's up and running. In this case, the transmitter wasn't even running at its maximum rated power, which was 75 kilowatts. The TPO license, TPO was 67 kilowatts. So even backing that power down a few percent helps the performance, basically. So MER of 40 dBs and SNR was actually even slightly higher with an EVM of about 0.63. And we've even seen better than that. But that just shows you sort of a typical result of what a new transmitter can give you. Without any real tweaking, it's all, once you've done the power cal, which does require a little bit of adjustment of things, the real-time adaptive correction really fixes everything up nicely for you. So how did it go? What we've learned so far is that if you do a few things up front, they go well, but there have been a few issues. Nearly all the issues were addressed ahead of time, so they weren't real issues in the end, but they were things that we would have overlooked because we went to the site or we had the customer help us by doing a good site survey, evaluate everything that was there, make sure there was nothing missing, because the biggest problem for us is making sure everything is correct on the quote. If we're missing something, that's a problem. Other problems that have come up have been things like delivery of parts and pieces. We have control over the shipment of the transmitter. We've been able to meet our deadlines pretty close. There's been a week or two delay here or there occasionally, but generally up to this point, we're doing quite well. We've been running two shifts in the factory. We've been, adding extra people. We've been, shipping things out as fast as we can. One of the problems is if the other parts aren't there on time, it can slow us down, or if the site isn't ready for some reason. There's lots of things that can slow you down, vendor parts, we are RF parts, the RF equipment vendors have been really, really good, but there's been a few cases where things were a few days late or a week late, and it can slow you down. And now our crews there waiting, and they go to another site, and they have to come back later. So the logistics are horrible for the service department. As they try to plan everything out, they're going to be 1 week at this site, the next week at that one. If one of them goes bad, they have to come back to that one. And it can take a while to figure it all out. So coordination is key here. The electrical should be done up front or in parallel with the installation. We're not really dependent on the tower work too much, usually, but we don't like working in buildings when they're hoisting antennas up and things like that, because there's a little bit of extra risk and danger, so we try to avoid that. So the tower crews can slow us down if they're still working when we want to be in there, and so we have to sort of work around that too. You might say, what could possibly go wrong, right? So what could possibly go wrong? Well, I've already mentioned most of the things go wrong, but before I get into that, here's where we are today on the timeline. We're into testing in phase one. So, there's been a phase zero that we've all heard about, but the real released data, this is straight from the FCC. We're nearing the end of phase one, where basically the transition date should be November the 30th. HCA's personal point of view is we don't see a problem with that. We're okay on the equipment we've shipped. We're probably okay on the next two or three or four phases from what I can tell. There are some people out here in the later phases that haven't ordered equipment yet, believe it or not. They're ordering equipment. There may be a big group that's ordering in chunks. They may not have ordered anything for out here, but that's in 2020 for their testing and on-air dates, so we're not too bad. I think we're okay here at the moment. I took a kind of a poll from various vendors, manufacturers, and everyone thinks we're going to probably run into a little bit of slippage by the time we get to phase two, phase three, phase four, somewhere in there. We don't know yet. Everyone's planning to make the dates. The commission wants us to make the dates. They're not changing anything. So, I think right now is keep your fingers crossed, see how things go. There's going to be some possible delays, though. Anything can happen, right? So what could go wrong? Issues that can occur. So I've already mentioned the top one, the vendor-supplied equipment. We're relying on that for our part to go accurately. Was the wrong equipment ordered, or was the right equipment ordered? Obviously, we can fix that up front if we know, or we try to avoid it. Electrical, we talked about, delayed or incorrect. Did they get the right electrical design? Do you have the right circuit breakers on the wall? The right specific ones that we need for this to work. So, incorrect power sizing could vary depending on your transmitter size going in and the efficiency of it and so forth. Weather delays. We've already run into this. There's been flooding and hurricanes and things. This can cause horrific delays, not only for the tower crew, obviously, but even for us getting access to the building, offloading the equipment. That can cause delays. That's already happened site access, tower work and so forth. So there's a lot of things there that we've seen, you know, of risk. Delays are possible. Biggest issue, you know, install screws having to reschedule due to these delays causing the domino effect. So what I'm thinking here is once that installation crew is delayed at one site, it causes a problem next. And we only have so many install crews, we can only have so many contract install crews who can do all this work. So you want to avoid this as much as possible. It's a problem. We're working on it. So the things to do, and I'm kind of repeating myself here, the things to do ahead of time is to make sure you start early. Most of you have already started, hopefully all of you have already started that are in repack. You know, you've got construction permits to get, you've got to apply for those, you get, you know, there's time wasted waiting for things to happen like that. You've got to get equipment that you need identified. You've got to identify any issues that you might think that could possibly happen and have a workaround if possible, you know. What could go wrong? So many little things that can add up to big things, unfortunately. But, you know, there's a lot of things like civil works that we don't normally do, but we can do it, but we always have to contract out building work. You know, you may have to knock a wall down or add some concrete for a heat exchanger or, you know, something like that. So there's little things that add up to a lot of things. Get everybody lined up on the right dates. Again, if something slips, it causes the dates of something to slip. All of this has to be rescheduled, so that can be a problem. Ensure all the items, I mentioned it about three times already, make sure all the items required are ordered well in advance because things are taking a long time right now. We're so backed up in the factory, if you were to order a transmitter today, it'd probably take 4 or 5 or 6 months to get it. It's that bad. It used to be 3 weeks, you know. But we're busy. You know, the factory is full capacity through the end of this calendar year at least. We've orders that are already in, so we know we're busy. So, plan a nice vacation when everything's finished, of course. The date? Well, I think it said 2020 something on there, right? So in about 2020, you can plan your big cruise to the Caribbean or wherever you like to go, somewhere warm, when everything's finished. Hopefully, everything goes fairly smoothly. We're keeping our fingers crossed. So far, so good. From a manufacturer's point of view, on the transmitter side, possibly we have the easiest part of this. You guys have a difficult task, you know, in terms of getting everything lined up and you've got to have some people available to help us and coordinate. And, you know, it's a bit of a challenge, but I think we're probably at the end of my presentation. Are we all right on time? Questions? Yes.
When it comes to scheduling permits and that type of thing, are you involved with that itself, or is that something that you ask the engineers to handle locally? Local authorities need construction permits or inspections from a master electrician with your local utility or whatever the case may be?
Yeah, so far we've mostly done that by asking the customer, the engineers at the station, to coordinate that, to do the construction permits and schedule work that's beyond what we've contracted to do, because normally we're doing the transmitter physical install, but that excludes the electrical install because you need certain licenses, you know, local electrical codes have to be met. So we're not doing a lot of electrical work, at least on the primary side, we're not doing that. So we've asked the customer to get the electricians scheduled, but generally we get that phone number of the electrician and we speak to them directly as well, because there can be some extra information that they were going to ask for, like what size wire do I need and what's, you know, is there any specifics that the transmitter has to have. So we like to have that direct connection with the contracted electrician. But in general, that person, it can be done two ways. You know, we can hire the electrician, but we still need to go source a local one. We usually ask the station for their preferred electrician. They usually have an electrical contractor company that they've already used in the past, so we like to use them if possible. You know, most stations have that. Yes.
A reminder that you can hire a project manager, which we at Scripps have done for many of our stations, and that can be a huge benefit to getting a lot of this stuff done. On the permitting side, we've hired a company to work through that, and if you see me later, I can give you the contact information so they can do a lot of that background work so that you can do your day job.
Thank you, Kent. That's some good answer there. So I don't work directly with the people in our building that do the service work, so that's good feedback, thank you. Any more questions? Okay, thank you very much, everybody.